Maybe we should just jump into the actual intro and just start going, because there's a lot of random sure. stuff. All right, ready? 3, 2, 1, go.
Apparently, Grayscale is also trying to set up a Litecoin trust. Damn. So they're just doing everything
now. So
much
stuff going on. So, hey, everyone, crazy. Officially, welcome to the Digital Cash Rundown, episode 155. 155 of these I've done. That's a lot. And probably 140 of them have been with the one and only Scott Cunningham, who's with us today. Not that many, but a lot of them. Hope you're doing great on this wonderful Friday. It's a holiday in some parts of the world. I know because there was a project that shall remain unnamed had their website go down because the DNS registrar screwed up big time, and they're trying to get it back online. And since they're located in France, they're like, oh, well, it's a 3-day holiday. We're not, bye. Like, it was just so hard. Anyway, it's all resolved, but that's all. That's my little anecdote there. Welcome, everyone. Got a fun show for us. Now let me just hit the ad thing, and then we get right into the news. So, of course, Coin ATM Radar threw me a bag, which is fantastic. Thank you again. And I got my little script here. So this podcast is sponsored by the one and only Coin ATM Radar. When buying crypto with cash, an ATM is much more reliable and safer than meeting some random person in a random place. And unlike an exchange, which could freeze your account, you truly own all the crypto you buy, which is very important when we're talking about SBF. And everyone remembers FTX, what happens when you don't hodl your own keys. Anyway, with Coin ATM Radar, you can find crypto ATMs and other services where you can buy or sell cryptocurrencies for cash. On their website, you can search by coin, address, if the ATM supports selling, as well as buying. And you can also search by geo area, i.e. country, state, city. You can also check and compare actual current fees with different ATMs. Find out more, head over to coinatmradar.com or coinatmradar.com. Yeah. The whole
I'll add to that, actually, that I just used them to go and find a good ATM the other day. And I tried withdrawing Litecoin to Canadian dollars for the first time, and took maybe 5 minutes, mostly just because of the Litecoin time to actually transact. But yeah, it was a very easy process. Wasn't too expensive. It was like $3 plus 8%. I mean, which isn't amazing, but it's way cheaper than tax. And it was cheaper than a lot of the other fees. So it was a fairly good rate. Easy process. Pretty happy with it. We'll do that again for sure.
Do they do KYC on these ATMs, or is it like a KYC Lite?
It's KYC Lite. So phone from 20 to 999, ID for anything over 1,000, but they accept VoIP numbers. So naturally I just used a VoIP number. So that's key. You do not want to use your real phone number. I mean, I don't know if this is messing with your sponsorship at all, but I do not recommend using your real phone number. I think VoIP is definitely the way to go there, but, or a burner or whatever, but that can get you up to 1,000. So, I mean, if you really want to be degenerate, you could like look up all of them in town, go to every single one, withdraw 1,000 from each. But I mean, I'm sure there's easier ways to do it as well.
Yeah. And it's also, let me give out another, listen, just because, Coin ATM Radar paid me doesn't mean I can't throw a freebie at someone here real quick. I'm going to open up,
because another good ATM located.
It's not an ATM. It's not a competitor. That'd be really shitty. Oh, okay. They should probably like remove my kind of stuff from that. Let's see, what's it called? Text Verify. And so I don't just because neither of these guys sponsor me, at least yet. I don't have to worry about shouting two out. But Juicy SMS is an interesting service, as well as Text Verified. And both of these ones give you a temporary, like a single-use real number, not a VoIP number, for verification purposes. And you can pay with crypto. And so you pay like 50 cents to use it once. And so it's like a pay-as-you-go with crypto. So because for all this verification stuff, yes, you should use a VoIP number. In fact, you should never give out your, you should not even know your real phone number because you can't get like SIM swapped and stuff. So just don't even touch your real number. Make sure it's hidden in your password manager somewhere so you can still top up your account or whatever you do. Use a VoIP number, and some services don't take VoIP numbers. And for those, you use one of these two services. I have used both of these and they're great. I don't, you know, not sponsored, not recommending super, but like they do work.
Yeah.
They do work and they take crypto. And so
that's great. I'll have to get that link.
I'm a big privacy nerd on this stuff. So yeah.
My other workaround is a burner phone, but they're not easy to get most of the time, but I do have a burner phone. So that's the other way.
Yeah. That's always good stuff. But yeah, so the ATM stuff, it's good to know that that works on some ATM providers, at least. I know it's a little sad that there are some ID requirements and other things that are starting to creep in Europe. And that really sucks because my number one usage for ATMs, because I already have crypto and I can spend it. So the only reason I need an ATM is to sell for cash. And that's for countries where I'm not super familiar with how to spend crypto around there.
Yeah, so that makes sense.
Unfortunately, I used to always do that in Spain. I think that they kind of the walls started closing in on that a little bit. But whatever. We're going to talk about the cards at the end of this thing anyway, which is a good happy thing.
Does that have anything to do with the recent law that they passed? I know you covered it on your channel. That you can't do private transactions. You have to be KYC'd pretty much for Europe.
Well, as far as I'm aware, that law won't go into effect for 3 years.
There's
some confusion of some people say, no, it's just being proposed, but then it was actually voted on. Maybe just the I don't know if it's passed, but it was like approved as the latest version. But after it gets, so it's either going into law or it's, you know, probably, or it's like their final thing and they can still edit it. If it's either way, it's at least 3 years until it would take effect. But there have been some restrictions. I've noticed some like delistings in certain countries, which if there's certain EU countries, but not EU wide, you know, it's something in the individual countries, which
interesting.
That's the problem. The worst thing about crypto is fiat always, you know?
Yeah. Well, and the policies that they create to try to slow us down.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's hit on the old jailbird here for a second. So here we go. I'll just throw up the bit with my magazine tweet or whatever. SBF. He stole billions in customer money, lied in court, and only got 25-year sentence. Ross Ulbricht created a website and is still serving 2 life sentences in prison. Injustice at its finest. And my little commentary thing on it was basically the same. So it's SBF getting 25 while Ross gets life is an absolute travesty of justice. But so these two news items kind of got like combined into one because of the tweets or whatever. But so what do you think about the whole SBF verdict thing?
Yeah, I mean, it's good that he didn't get like 6 years or whatever his lawyers were asking for. It was unfortunate that they were like dropping a bunch of those charges and making it, I mean, how well is he going to be doing in 25 years? Hard for me to say, but, it should have been more, I guess it is what it is. Like, I mean, obviously when you're comparing to who you just mentioned for Silk Road, it's like, probably should be more in comparison, but it's one of those things. And I imagine maybe the KuCoin CEOs might be joining him fairly soon.
Oh God. Yeah, it's pretty insane. It's kind of funny because a lot of these sorts of I don't like prison. I don't like people going to prison. Even people who deserve it, I'd rather there be a restitution kind of a way for whatever, you know, happens. And a lot of these crypto crackdowns are just nonsense. But SBF kind of deserves everything, I think. And so if he's there for 25 years, that sounds kind of like a commensurate punishment for what he's the harm he's actually done and all that. Do you think he's going to be there the whole 25 years, or do you think he'll be out in like 10?
I absolutely think he'll be out early, and he'll have like a stash of money waiting for him.
Yeah. So probably like 10, yeah. Huh?
Maybe 10. I mean, I'm definitely not, I wouldn't be able to put a number on it, but I don't think he will serve a full sentence. I think I could say that pretty confidently. And it's not like they took away all of his money. I guarantee he has a nice little retirement package waiting for him when he gets out.
Brutal. Yeah, that's the travesty part, is that, you know, all this kind of stuff, especially all the harm he's done. I know I've heard of some people taking their own lives after they lost everything in FTX. I know a lot of people personally. I don't know anyone who lost significant amounts there, but I do know a significant amount of people who lost like something, like a couple grand here or there.
Yeah. How old is FTX actually? Like, how old will he be when he gets out?
He's early mid 30s. He's got to be like 33, if I were to guess. So
1992, yeah. Actually. So 32.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I guess so pretty well.
He'll be like 57.
Yeah, I mean, that's a brutal way to lose the good years of your life. But, you know, it's kind of brutal what he did. So there's all that. The thing is, compared to the Ross Ulbricht thing. Well, first of all, before we even hit the Ross Ulbricht thing, Binance and KuCoin. Now, I know very little about KuCoin. So, whatever. I don't think anyone in Binance should be getting any prison time. This is my personal opinion. I don't think anyone should be getting prison time, and I don't really agree with a lot of those fines. There's a huge difference between, you know, money laundering and whatever kind of like laws that didn't really hurt anyone except for made the government mad because whatever, and literally stealing people's money. So as far as I'm aware, neither Binance nor KuCoin hurt anyone. Maybe I haven't looked into it too
much. Binance has stolen people's money. Even though that's not what they're going for after them for, I still think this is kind of just like a, you know, karma or whatever. Like, you did do the bad thing. They're not going after the thing that you did.
About the Steam thing.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And like, I'm sure because almost no one is aware of that, it's not the first time. Like,
yeah,
no one cared about it. No one talked about it. It has to have happened more than just that one time. So like that,
I would hair split on the terminology. I would probably call it embezzlement instead, because
I guess. It's something that is like illegal that they didn't get in trouble for, and yes, like that enough is like enough that I think they should be going down for something.
Now, is it actually illegal, or is it just the equivalent of something that is illegal? So, like, for example,
that's a fair question.
Because if Coinbase has all your money, like, and they use it to vote in a protocol way, or for example, let's just say,
but also prevent you from being able to sell because now it's locked up.
Yeah.
So they take it from you. Not like you can't use it anymore until they're done using it.
Yeah. Which is what I would call, I think that's a textbook definition of embezzlement, I think, is like taking money. It's not you using it. But they didn't steal it because the customers did get it back in the end, didn't they? I don't remember the final
points. I believe so, but it lost most of its value because you couldn't sell, and then everything happened. So it's like, you give me $1,000, I'm like, okay, I'll hold this for you. And then you say, can I have it back? And I say, you can have it back in 3 weeks. And then you go, why 3 weeks? And go, well, I invested it, it's locked up. And you go,
yeah.
Okay. And then I give it back to you in 3 weeks, and it's like, sorry, it was a bad trade. Here's $100. And you go, where's my 1,000? And you go, well, I mean, that's how it goes. Like, you gave me the 1,000. I was holding onto it for you. Like, I didn't do anything wrong. And it's like, feels like you did something wrong. Cause like, where's my money?
Exactly.
So yeah.
Yeah. It's very strange. The thing about this is I think that's criminal. I think that's bad. Do banks ever withhold your money from you? Sometimes.
So what it would be though, it would be like your banks withhold your stocks. So like I go to sell my stock on a day that it's valuable, And then they say, no, come back in 2 weeks when it's lost 80% of its value. And then you're allowed to sell. And then you go, huh, that seems.
Yeah, I don't know if that legal. Actually happens. Like if there's trading platforms that crash and they're like, whoops, sorry. Because under this same thing, I mean, Coinbase does go down sometimes.
I mean, Robinhood had that, right?
Yeah.
With crypto and their trading houses and all the weird stuff that they had going on.
Yeah. There's a lot of rot in the whole system. And like Coinbase going down all the time, people say, oh, it's just so they prevent people from buying the dip or whatever. Mm. I think they just are cutting corners on their infrastructure. But
like it is just like too much volume.
And yeah, there were insider trading cases that were settled out of court and stuff that were not, you know, that didn't. So right. It's hard to tell, really. But yeah, so, but the thing, my point is, the thing they're going after Binance for is not something that I would consider a crime from my knowledge. But yes, thanks for bringing that up because I had almost forgotten about those actual kind of fucking criminal things a little bit. But again, those are
the problem is, though, you're right in saying like what they're going after them now for isn't really like that bad. But if they do get in trouble, the only precedent being set is they don't do this thing that isn't really that bad. And it's like not like, oh, don't take users' funds and use them like without their consent. It's like that's what needs to have the precedent set. But obviously it's not going to. So it's not going to set any good legal precedents.
Yeah. And do you know anything about the KuCoin case other than, of course, it's one of those early days exchanges that a lot of people did sketchy things on kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know much about it. I did use it way back in the day, and I just like put like, you know, $10 into every like shitcoin on the exchange. And then I ended up like losing most of it and then taking out whatever rest I had. But unfortunately, some of those did actually end up being like big coins, and I did not keep those coins, like Digibyte and things like that. But yeah, I haven't really used them much since. I mean, it's mostly just circumstantial because they did something where they pissed off Ontario, and Ontario, like where I live, is super strict on their investing. So they like said no more KuCoin, no more Binance in Ontario. So we're actually very restricted here in Ontario for where we can actually trade.
Yeah, it's kind of like New York, I guess. You know.
Yeah.
But yeah. So and then we go to, you know, Ross Ulbricht, and that's like the thing with Ross. Is so back in the day, like I got my first Bitcoin like 2 months before the Silk Road got shut down. So it was like I came into it during that whole time. I never, one thing's for sure, and I, you know, this is the meanest thing I'll say, is Silk Road is clearly flagrantly illegal. Like if it's not, if you get busted for running that, like even though I think you did nothing wrong personally, it's like, okay, you're selling drugs online and stuff like that. I'm sure the government's going to be pissed off. It's like, it just, when you create this thing, you expect that's why you do it secretly, is, you know, something like that. Now, the thing is, one of the weirdest thing is the number one thing that kind of came out of that thing seems to be some like murder for hire thing, which was completely, the charges were completely dropped and didn't make it in at all. And it's, a lot of people are like, oh, this guy tried to murder people. And I think it was like a dirty, like public court of public opinion kind of tactic to prevent him from getting a lot of, you know, a lot of press. But for someone who did not like steal money to be getting less than someone who stole a lot of money is, you know, it's crazy that he, you know, got like many life sentences, right? He got like life plus 40 or something like that. And it's compared to like CZ and like, I would put him in the same category as like CZ and whoever runs KuCoin or whatever, like in that whole thing where, you know, okay, maybe you make him go to prison for a little bit. Maybe you hit him with, again, which I don't think is right, but cause the government, you know, hates you when you sell drugs and stuff. Okay. Maybe just do that. Maybe do some big fine and restitution, whatever, you know, but it's pretty crazy to think that like, SBF hurt a lot of people. Ross Ulbricht didn't really hurt anyone, but he annoyed the government. And so the government just like, smash, it's over. Your life's over. Done.
I mean, I'd caveat that slightly and say, like, I mean, if someone bought drugs through his website and died, I mean, he's not like 100%, like, not to blame, because there's also no regulation. And then you go on this website and you think, oh, like, it's like a website, so there's some legitimacy to it. And, you know, like, they might think it's a little bit better. I mean, fast forward to today, almost everything is legalized in British Columbia and Canada. Yeah. Like, we have legalized cocaine. So it's pretty absurd, but it's pretty absurd. But I don't.
The crypto after parties are lit.
I can't imagine. But there's so much legal here in Canada. You can order like psilocybin online legally to anywhere in Canada, which is pretty absurd as well. And then you go back and it's like it was so illegal, two life sentences. And now that's just like commonplace here in Canada, at least. It is pretty crazy to see the evolution of that. But I mean, two life sentences is probably a little bit much.
Yes. And the U.S. is obviously dragging its feet as far as like drug legalization across the board, although it is inching to get forward in a lot of states. But so imagine like a few years from now, like, if someone did the exact same thing as him, it'd probably be like, oh, you have some like money transmitter stuff that we don't like. Or like, oh, the allowing to people to post like murder for hire type stuff is, I don't, why you gotta do that? I mean, I get it's like a thought experiment in radical free trade, which I think is great. But it's just like, you know, as long as you're running a centralized website, which it was, I would probably be like, you know what? We're going to like not let people do, like, you know, keep with the non-aggression principle at least, and just be like, as long as it's not like something directly violent or fraudulent, if we find those, we're going to delete them. But other than that, but again, bygones, I'm sure Ross probably agrees in retrospect that some of that stuff was probably not the smartest, but definitely doesn't deserve to have everything, you know, like that kind of treatment. Yeah. When SBF, you know, just, it's really titanic just how bad the stuff he did, just how, like, you know.
Plus, I mean, how well can you really moderate that? I mean, I might just be assuming, but I can't imagine they were like, so was it like a good 1 to 10? Give us a rating on how good the drugs were or whatever. Like, I don't really think they're doing like a ton of like moderation, but, you know, maybe I was wrong. I mean, it was quite a while ago before that was really a big thing to be even doing much moderation at all.
I think they must have had seller ratings or something. I actually know some friends who, or some acquaintances, I'll say, who did buy stuff from there, and it was their like hookup. Like, a lot of people I know who that was their intro to crypto. And like this, like, I have to say, Ross, like, as much as the Silk Roads, I never used it explicitly because. First off, I'm more risk averse than that, but also because there's nothing I'm really interested in that I can't freely buy today. Like, everything I happen to like personally is legal, and I lucked out that way, you know. Even like marijuana and stuff, I'm not really that into it, and so like all that stuff. So I got lucky, but the Silk Road Bitcoin was like a nothing. It was just something that people played with online. People were like, oh, this could be cool, and it wasn't until like Satoshi Dice that Eric Voorhees created, kind of like, oh, people want to play this little dice game. Okay, that's fine. But it wasn't until the Silk Road was basically, you know, you have uncensorable money. What are the only things you can't buy with your bank account today that is illegal to buy online? And just literally do all those things right there. And then all of a sudden people are like, wow, I like this Bitcoin thing. This is cool. And so after the Silk Road went down, too late, like the proof of concept was there. You showed what this tech was good for, and, you know, the cat's out of the bag. So I definitely salute Ross's sacrifice in having us all here today. You know, I mean, I wouldn't have had a site that had all those kinds of things personally, but it definitely was.
Getting the U.S. government loading their bags with Bitcoin.
Listen, there's that too, which,
yeah,
I'm a little salty about that part, but yeah. Any other thoughts before we talk about Roger's book and the whole Bitcoin thingy?
No, pretty much just that last comment. It's unfortunate that the conclusion of all that is the U.S. gets to hold massive bags of Bitcoin, which is definitely not a good look for Bitcoin. But At the very least, maybe that has helped with some of their rulings being favorable.
Yeah, for sure. I'm trying to think, find this one tweet. So first, anyway, Rogers' new book. So let me just throw this up. I'm a little slow today, right? He posted, my new book on hijacking Bitcoin is already available. Was our number one on Amazon in the economics section. Amazon hot releases, hijacking Bitcoin. So Roger Ver, Bitcoin Jesus, released his book called Hijacking Bitcoin that basically told the whole story up through the BSV split, I believe, of the block size wars and stuff. And if he, so I interviewed him last night. I'm going to put that out on the channel probably around Tuesday. But if I think if he had put this book out like 2 years ago, it would have just been like, okay, Roger, you know, cool book, you know, it's nice, but like, really, like you just like you're getting a broken record again on this kind of thing. But the timing I think is very good on this, where it's still new enough to where it's still, you know, current enough that it's not like ancient history, but it's also a lot of people don't know this history that are in the crypto space right now. And I think it's actually having a big impact outside of like the BCH bubble, which is what it would have been restricted to a couple of years ago. I don't know how much you've heard about the book or any of your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I haven't looked into it too much. I just sort of like read the summary, but essentially it's like, you know, like Bitcoin is different from what it originally set out to be and stuff like that. My general take on Bitcoin is like, yeah, like it's not really like cash, it's gold. Mm. I mean, that's my take, because I know it's obviously meant to originally be cash, but it's sort of evolved into being digital gold now. And that's sort of the way that I look at it.
Yeah,
I'm not a maxi by any means. I don't think that we should be building NFTs and all these things on Bitcoin. I don't think Bitcoin is the everything network. I think it should just be as digital gold, and that's really all it should be. But you know, there's people who are super gung-ho on that, and I really think a lot of it, like ordinals and stuff, is spammy personally. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, maybe you can shed some more light on the book and we'll dive into it, because yeah
I haven't ordered it yet. I need to do that. I have not read a paper book in like 15 years or something, because I was homeschooled, and that means I just read everything. And so I've read so many books in my life. I'm booked out. I'm all like, right. If it's not in a tweet or a TikTok, I don't want to read it. Or if it's not like a white paper or, you know, it's the technical documentation. Like, but I will read this one, and also I need it for the shelf back here. I need to fill it out a little
bit. Oh, more. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I think it's very interesting to see the different kind of the different kind of reception that this thing could have, because on the one hand, I'm going to highlight this tweet from Hodel Magoo, who's kind of a really annoying maxi, but sort of principled and so, like, you know, like a value, not completely valueless. Anyway, just says, can everyone shut the fuck up about Roger Ver as it's 2024 and not 2017? So he does not like it, but this is in an interesting spot in the Bitcoin history, because during this whole time, the whole ordinals thing, I really think, forced a question where all of a sudden Lightning started to break down. People's ability to use Lightning wallets and stuff started to break down because the fees went too high for Lightning to work for all the on-chain transactions it needs. Then a lot of people got soul searching, and a whole lot of cypherpunk type people left in Bitcoin started to question this and talk about like making bigger blocks and stuff, interestingly enough. And one of these people is none other than John Carvalho, or Bitcoin Error Log. I don't know if you've seen him back in the day. He used to work for BitRefill, and he was the guy who famously got Roger Ver on his podcast and attacked him with a bunch of weird questions and got him to flip off the camera and rage quit. So this guy's about as like toxic maxi as you could get, but he's starting to sound a lot like a big blocker these days, because he started a company called Synonym, I believe, which is a Lightning network based service provider. And so now he's just like, what the hell is it? It doesn't work. And so now he's completely going against it. This tweet I'm highlighting says, if Bitcoin transaction fees reached equivalent of $100,000 each in today's buying power, what would you do? And just keep using Bitcoin, use a shitcoin, use a bank or other, and keep using Bitcoin was like the top thing. And he did mention somewhere down there of like he's very disappointed in the poll results. So there's a bunch of people like him that are starting to flip on this. And I think there's also a lot of people who are came in during the last bull cycle that just have no idea about the whole history and are now starting to be like they're primed to hear Roger. They have written Roger Veroff as this kook. Like they're primed to hear the message and just be like, oh, okay, I didn't know any of that. I don't know. Have you seen much of that around the Bitcoin space, or do you see much stuff from Bitcoiners these days?
I mean, a lot of my focus lately has been on Cosmos because I just feel like a lot of, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of innovation there, and that's where a lot of things are happening. But yeah, I mean, the way that I look at Bitcoin is it's like gold. So, you know, if I want to spend my gold, it's going to be a little cumbersome, but Bitcoin is better at spending than gold. I could more easily buy things like at a retail store with Bitcoin than I can with gold. But I wouldn't be going around trying to spend my gold either. I would just hold on to it for as an investment. So again, I don't really look at Bitcoin as like a transactional cryptocurrency. I look at it more as like an investment. But yeah, if you were looking at it like a transactional cryptocurrency, then yeah, I could see why you might be having problems with Bitcoin. I would not use it in that sense. I would use Litecoin or Dash or Bitcoin Cash. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just the reality of it. I think the problem is with like maxis and with a lot of this stuff is like they're not looking at different cryptocurrencies as like use case based, mm-hmm. which is really how I think it should be viewed. And they're looking at it just like, this is the only thing that I should use, and I'll make it work for everything. And it's like, yeah, I guess you could do that, but it's not practical. Like if I could probably find a way to spend my gold, I could like brute force it and only go to places that accept, but it's like, but I'm going to cause myself a lot of problems, and I could just use easier methods and less fees and less trouble. And I see it kind of like the same thing. It's like, yeah, you could brute force it, but it's not going to be like efficient, or like you're kind of just like, you know, trying to put a square peg in a circular hole, and you're not going to get a lot of progress with doing that. But that's my take. I mean,
it's kind of, there's like two different things going on there. On the one hand, there's that very practical take, which, I have segmented takes, right? Where one is like what works for what I want to do. And that has a lot mm-hmm. to do with like, for example, my NFTs for this podcast are issued on Polygon.
Yeah.
It just works and whatever. Yeah. But I don't trust Polygon for shit because it has admin keys. It's basically a company, right? It's not, I would not call it decentralized at all. And then there's my philosophy of like what I think are sound blockchain principles and stuff like that. And so on the practical level, I think it's just fine to have a stash of BTC for Bitcoin, right? I have to hair split with the Bitcoin cashers to get mad at me if I just call it Bitcoin. But like to just have a stash of Bitcoin and then just swap some over for whatever you want to spend, that's probably the smartest thing to do today, practically. Mm-hmm. Philosophically, you know, one has to sort of remember the old days and be like, I could just have this, and I wouldn't have to have this and then spend a giant fee whenever I want to swap it to this to actually use. So it's kind of those two things together. I think that, I mean, obviously your approach is the healthiest, right? That's the most useful. And then there's just also some people are trying to, like be a part of the crypto movement, be an activist in there, right? To try to cause some things to happen. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, once you actually start using crypto as we do, you realize pretty quickly that Bitcoin is not probably the best method to do so. I think based on what I just said, I think a lot of people, the biggest problem is probably just they're not actually using crypto in their day-to-day life. So they don't actually have a practical understanding of how you or why you would use Bitcoin or something else. You know, I don't think many people are using it in that sense. They're just like speculating on it. So they don't actually have that real world application use of it to have that understanding or that. Not that they don't understand, but just that like you have to actually do it to really realize that, to like get hit by that realization that you're like, oh, okay, like, yeah, like I'm not going to do this every day where I'm going to spend all this money and I'm going to wait like 10 minutes to do this or whatever. Whatever the gripe ends up being, there's a million different ways that you can cut that down and make it make more sense for like everyday transactions. So, yeah, I think once people actually like live that through, then there'll be a lot more understanding, but I don't expect a lot of people will. But if you're really, really into crypto, you definitely should try it out, or like, you know, some of the various use cases of it. You should definitely like live that yourself.
Yeah, definitely like do what you want with it. Do anything with it. I think it's the greatest teaching tool. And I was on a space yesterday about the whole, you know, ideological shift in the BTC community. And I've just noticed that a lot of people who've shifted their opinions did so because of usage. Like Sergey of Bitrefill, he's probably still a maxi, but he's much more reasonable since he has a business that actually runs on this stuff. And then he was huge in pushing Lightning for a long time, still does, but now he's accepting all kinds of EVM stuff, going to ETH conferences to promote it, and like all this other stuff. Life evens you out. And I'll just throw up another couple of these maxi tweets, or ex-maxi, you know, Dave's ex-maxi, whatever. Russell Okung, who is I think he's an NFL player, and he made a name for himself by taking his entire salary or half of it in Bitcoin, and the maxis loved this guy and everything. And then he started experimenting with ordinals, and he got attacked, and then he didn't like that. And so he started doing the deep dive, he started listening to Roger Ver stuff, and now he just posted here, he says, number go up is an attack on Bitcoin. I'm like, whoa, that's a spicy take. I mean, I think I agree, but it is kind of it's kind of interesting to see that. And then let me flip to the next one. Ray Youssef, who's another, he does SifKit and No Ones, or the apps that he's kind of part of, he's been kind of warming up pretty soon. He said, store of value and medium exchange can coexist, and they must, else Bitcoin is impotent. Who agrees? And then the most recent interesting figure, some PhD guy called Fred Krueger, who's kind of new to the crypto space-ish, but he's mostly a Bitcoin maxi, or he was. He got really into Thorchain he's gotten into discovering Thorchain when he realized, oh, I can take a Bitcoin denominator, I can use Bitcoin as a collateral to get a loan on that Bitcoin and go do stuff and at a protocol decentralized level. And the maxis fucking hate him for that. And so he just said, tomorrow's a deep dive with Thorchain, blah, blah, blah. He says, this is not a sponsored post. I've got nothing from Thorchain. I personally do not own any Rune, but maybe I should. And you know, it's crazy when Adam Back is commenting on it, all trying to tell him not to. Oh, it's risky, all this kind of stuff, you know? And so there's like a lot of these maxi big figures starting to just shift over to, I wouldn't say like not like just starting to become more open-minded and reasonable on these things. And some of these are because they've actually experienced the real technology and their use cases have changed. But some of it is also just because they've been curious and then the maxi cult attacked them and then they're all, you know, so yeah.
Well, it's like, I mean, how many of those people are actually like spending their Bitcoin on a daily basis? And then it's like, oh, yeah, it's not really practical. And then they go, oh, like here's Dash and Litecoin and Bitcoin Cash. And then, oh, if I actually want to trade my Bitcoin and stay fully decentralized across chains, it's like, oh, well, there's Thorchain. And it's like, well, there you go. It's like, yeah, that makes total sense. That it's like, once you actually start to venture out a little bit, you're going to become more accepting of other coins. You know, the real travesty with all of this is we are literally in like the most meme coin, shit coin, like just complete nonsense. There's no fundamentals. There's no backing. I'm not even gonna like, we're not even gonna tell you like the inflation rate or anything. Just buy this meme. Like, that's the era we're in right now, and people are worried about like Bitcoin or whatever. And it's like, we are literally going through like the biggest era of like nonsense coins and like borderline like pump and dump scams. Probably more than we did even in the last cycle, because it's like normal now. Before it was like we didn't know better. Now it's like we're fully aware and more than happy to participate. Like, this is a scam, let me invest in it.
Yeah,
that's where a lot of people are right now. And we're at this point and we're arguing about like Bitcoin, and like, it's like there are way bigger problems in the crypto space that we could be looking at right now. I mean, I'm not discounting that, like, you know, not discounting his book, but it's like there's way bigger issues that we should be like addressing in Bitcoin and a lot. I mean, in crypto in general. And that's like a lot of the scams, pump and dumps, like the normalization of investing in literally scams and like stuff that you know is risky. Like, basically just saying gambling or is investing, and like that's fine, or investing is gambling and that's fine. And a lot of people are like in this boat now. I have friends who have made like hundreds of thousands of dollars in the last 6 months doing this. And I'm like, maybe you should cash out. And they're like, yeah, this is total degeneracy. I'm fine just continuing this. And it's like, all right, like, but yeah, it's wild. It's wild where we're at right now.
Yeah, the whole meme coin thing, I'm sort of conflicted on that, because on the one hand, it's just pure crap. Like, just nothing real, nothing fundamental. It's all going to go away. On the other hand, I kind of see it like gaming, and gaming is a, like, whether it's like video games or gambling, those kinds of things, where people engage in an activity for entertainment purposes, and a lot of the entertainment purposes, a lot of the entertainment value is the chance at getting money, or just like the, oh, I put some money in, I might get more, I might not, I didn't get any, whatever, but I still had fun. Like, I'm super whitewashing gambling here, by the way. There's a lot of real gross, like, life losing, like a lot of bad stuff that can happen for gambling. So don't gamble irresponsibly, including crypto trans fucking gambling, just so you know. So for that, and also I view it as sort of a canary in the coal mine type thing, where if this doesn't happen, it means that crypto's overregulated. You can't do anything you want. You should be able to do everything you want, just to like figure out what are the cool things. And then it's just like, well, some people are doing dumb scam things over here. Just be aware. Don't do that. Like, I don't know if you saw the Slurf thing on Solana. There's this Slurf meme coin.
No.
And the dude, it's like a sloth type thing. And apparently the guy has a very sloth. He sounds like a sloth himself. And it's not like an act. He just happens to be that way. And he got like a 10 million for a pre-sale, and he accidentally like pressed the wrong button and burned it all. And
so, yeah. I did see that, actually. Yeah.
But like,
it's like, A, is that real? Like, did he really accidentally do that?
I think
there's so many questions.
But also, it's a great marketing gimmick for his thing. But also, I can't feel sorry for anyone who lost their money in that, if they didn't lose their money. If you didn't.
Yeah.
Because what the hell are you're throwing some money at this random, you don't even know who this person is. And they
But have, that's most people, I would say, now in crypto. Yeah,
they deserve to lose it all. Like, I hate to say but
the problem is, it's like, even if everyone loses everything in this cycle, they won't learn, because that already did happen in the last cycle. and it's bigger now. Maybe, yeah, probably, but it's bigger now than it was then. And it's like, okay, well, even if everyone loses everything this time, it might be even bigger in the next cycle. Like, so to some degree, I'm like, yeah, we shouldn't feel bad for people who are just like gambling when they should be like investing. But at this point, like, it is somewhat fair to say like people don't know better at this point, because it's like, it's so normal that like anyone I talk to about crypto is like, oh, like I heard about this random like coin. If I buy, it's 0.00001. So if I buy a million and it goes to a dollar, I'll have some. And it's like, no, like look at the supply, look at the, like you have to, but yeah, I mean, it is unfortunate that it's gotten this bad. I don't think regulation is the way to correct it. But there has to be some sort of thing done. Like, just trying to educate people isn't enough at this point, because the like ratio of like educators to new people coming in and buying shitcoins is just, there's such a big gap. And they don't even like look at like the videos. They're just looking at like, what's the shitcoin that I need to buy? Or they're just looking at videos of like shitcoin shillers, and then they think those are the authorities. And it's like, it's even worse. But yeah, I don't know exactly what needs to be done, but like, I don't think it's just like, we just need to wait this one out, because I feel like it's just souring so many people on crypto every cycle. And it's such like a loss that we shouldn't really need to deal with, because we could have so many people investing in good quality crypto coins and, and good projects, and like, and the space could be a whole lot more wholesome. But instead, it's like every other thing is like a pump and dump, a scam, or like, you know, someone's giving up on crypto entirely because of, you know, X thing that happened.
Well, and so I haven't really thought, this isn't like a superly super tough, like fast, hard and fast belief, but I kind of think that meme coins are a great step in that direction, because they sort of isolate. It's kind of like isolating the cancer, you know, where you see the very obviously casino things. If you want to play the casino, you go in there.
Like penny stocks. Like, you know, if you're going to go into penny stocks.
Yeah. Or it's like literally like a casino. Like, it's literally like no one, no, like whiff. Doge whiff hat. You really think there's value behind that? No, you're playing a game. You're hoping it goes up. At least with Dogecoin, people are like, well, maybe Elon will put it as a payment process. Like, there's a little bit of a non-scamminess to it too. Whereas, you know, whiff and what are the other, you know, slurf and all the other. There's so many of those that are like just clearly, I wouldn't even say scams, because they don't even try to scam people. They just say, this is a meme coin, buy it, and I hope it goes up, and maybe it won't. Like, that's not a scam. That's just a terrible investment. But it's kind of...
I mean, you're right. Most of them are like that. They're not like, hey, this is like going to do all these things, and then it doesn't. It's literally just like, this does nothing. Please buy it.
You know, in, I remember in the 2017 era, there's just so many more of these types of projects that were masquerading as real projects, because that's what you had to do. Now you don't have to. But like back in the day, like one that'll be super easy to mention is Verge, aka Dogecoin Dark. And it was like, oh, new privacy coin, point hub, this. And like, it's literally just a dumb pump and dump. And the entire privacy thing was just an, like, I think they used Dandelion +++, some kind of like an IP address obfuscation for like the nodes. But the actual chain had no privacy functions at all, just a Dogecoin fork. And it's clearly a bad faith thing to be like, oh, but this one. And then, of course, you have like all the like when Zcash came out, there's Zcash and then Zcoin, which is now called Furo, kind of came out around the same time. I think Furo was first, but whatever. And then there was like Zclassic, and then there was Ycash, and then there's, you know, there was Zencash, which then turned into Horizon and became a different thing. But like, there's a bunch of these kind of, and then there's R. Like, listen, and by the way, someone unfollowed my channel because I complained about R, but let's get some other, more unfollowers. R is a scam, right? It's not necessarily a scam, but it is, because it's just a copy and paste of Zcash with some extra weird little things. No one's thinking that this is it's not a seriously developed project. It's not like you have a ton of people. It's not like this is going to be the new, it's a meme coin, but it's a privacy meme coin. And it's being, there's a lot of like, I know like libertarian type people who are like, oh, I heard this is like the best one. I'm going to like buy a bag because I want to like, you know, separate money from states. Like, dude, this, just do a stupid pirate coin on Solana, a pirate meme coin. Don't put any privacy stuff. Don't try to LARP as that, and just let people gamble on that. Don't do this nonsense. And so I think that now you're starting to separate those things out a little bit more, where now like the meme coin sector is just the gambling sector, and then the real projects will all have to compete with real projects and not the meme value of each other. But maybe that's an optimistic point of view. I don't know.
I think that's a good point. I do think it's a little optimistic, because what it has also created is like, it's normalized the idea of like meme coins. So like, when you say like, oh, but like, you know, be ready to lose what you invest, and you know, all the general sayings that you would say to someone, like, you know, it's basically gambling. And people hear that so much now that it's almost like it's just like a generic statement that like means nothing to them. Like, you know what I mean? Like, oh, I'm going to invest in this meme coin because it might go to a dollar. And it's like, okay, well, like there's no fundamentals behind it. It's like a huge risk. You're basically gambling, et cetera, et cetera. And they go, yeah. It's like, but like, this is what everyone does. This is normal. So it's fine. It's like, all right, I guess. But like, so you would say, oh, but they know that they're gambling and investing. It's like, kind of, because now everyone knows that they're gambling and investing. And because everyone is doing it, this is just investing now. And it's like, that's like, I think the, like the philosophy behind it, or the ethos rather, is like, is the real problem, that like everyone has just like become okay with the idea that like, this is bad and that's fine. Essentially, yeah. like in the simplest form.
Well, in my typical fashion, I'm going to find a way to blame this all on Bitcoin maximalists. So let's do it. So I think that the, like, just like, Russell Okung was saying about, I think that was him who said it, about number go up as an attack on Bitcoin or whatever. At some point, I think that there's a lot of blame for people who've been pumping the price of Bitcoin all these years. There were some really scammy posts from the official Bitcoin account on Twitter saying, you know, like, smiling ear to ears, the profits roll in with this happy little man with like Bitcoin raining from, and just like, you know, you wish you know, FOMO is hitting hard. You'll wish you had some, and all this stuff with some guy going, oh, with like money raining, like really scammy shit. And a lot of Bitcoin, like Michael Saylor is a big problem with this. Max Keiser is a big problem. All the Bitcoin thought leaders, including Adam Back, who usually tries to be like more technical and measured. He does talk a lot about like the number going up, the price going up, the price gets some. And then there's a lot of people, even in the greater crypto space, that have given what has historically turned out to be sound advice, which is just buy some Bitcoin and just forget about it and come back in a few years and you'll thank me. And it's like, that has happened, that on an individual basis has historically been a good piece of advice. But just like that, this is, you buy it and it goes up. And that's like the one thing, because I think people have failed to communicate on the freedom money thing, especially if they're like, well, why does it cost so much? Well, what's a layer two? And like all that other stuff, it's just too hard. So they're just like, buy it, it's going to go up. This is amazing technology. It's going to change the world. Buy it, it goes up. And then people think, oh, that's what crypto's for. And so all those people buy Bitcoin. And then there's either people who are crazy, you know, degens that are just playing the meme coin game, or there's the righteous people, but even the righteous who say yield is a scam, which is complete nonsense, as any investor knows, right? But like, there's yield is a scam, but I still just only want to buy this because it's going to go up and it's never going to go down. I think that whole culture, like the buy market cap, I would say 90% of the crypto culture is about gains, you know, because right. Ethereum has all this and then Bitcoin is all that too.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair synopsis. It would have been much better if they just said like, buy this because it's like gold, but it's better than gold, which is accurate. Like it has the qualities of gold.
They people on buying gold because people these days a lot.
Well, I guess you're right. So it's like, so it's more so like, do you want to like, 401k. Yeah, I guess you're right. It comes back to like, do you care more about like freedom and like true ownership of your wealth or the number go up thing? I guess you're right in that sense. Like it's just such a normal thing for people to be like, well, number go up. The main difference though is like Bitcoin has many qualities as to why it should go up. Whereas a lot of the meme coins like and stuff do not, and they do not have any qualities or fundamentals that would actually result in that happening. So it's like, it is a bit different, but I do get like the original, like buy this because it will go up in value is generally coming from Bitcoin. Cause like that was the first one for that to be the case.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I think that is true, but yeah, they should definitely just shift more to like, this is like digital gold, hold this because like it'll not necessarily it'll go up in value, but like it should based on the qualities of gold if people value those qualities, less so that it's just inherent that it'll go up. That's kind of the main shift in the messaging that needs to happen. But Yeah, I mean, it's a hard one to navigate because, like, are you really going to start going around telling people it's like, well, it's probably not going to go up, but like buy it and then go, well, why would I buy it then? And it's like, you get into that whole conversation. And, you know, I will say, like, you don't need to understand how Bitcoin works. And this is the biggest problem that I see. Like, every time I take an Uber, I'm always curious to see, like, you know, tap into the zeitgeist. Like, what are you hearing about Bitcoin? Mm-hmm. And like last night, he's like, well, my brother invested like $100,000 or something in Bitcoin, and he lost most of it, and he sold at the bottom of like a dip. And I was like, well, that's unfortunate. He's like, so I don't really think it's like a safe thing, and I don't really get it. And this is like what I tell every person when they say, like, I don't really get it. Like, why is it like useful? Like, what's mining and all this stuff? And I say, well, I mean, as someone who like went to school for IT, most people don't understand DNS servers and how they, you know, like translate an IP address into a domain and all these different things. Like all the little technicals of the internet, almost no one understands that, but they like use the internet, and the internet is valuable. And that's really all you need to understand. Like, no one's going to be able to tell me like how anything in the back end of the internet works. For the most part, obviously someone who's educated on it, but like the average person that you speak to isn't going to be able to tell you any of that. Just like the average person, if I ask them, like, you know, how are blocks mined, people probably don't know that either. And it's like, that's okay to not know the like technical back end to use it, because you just need to know how to use it and why you should use it and why it's valuable. Like, I use the internet because it's useful. I don't need to understand every intricacy of the internet, or even more simply, like car engine combustion. I don't know how that works, but I can drive my car. Mm-hmm. And as long as it's like useful to get me from A to B, like that is useful. That's the biggest like trip up, I would say, for most people. It's like, you don't need to understand what is under the hood of the car to understand that the car has value. Like, I can trust that the dealership or whoever has a reasonable amount of value. I mean, they might be trying to fleece me for a little bit of money if I don't really understand cars, but generally speaking, the value is like market value for this car, more or less. And it's like, I don't need to understand, like I'm not really going to get a way better price because I'm like, oh, well, like I understand how the engine combustion works, so like maybe you should give me a cheaper price for this car. And they go, no, like the price is the price. And I go, okay, well, fine. Like, I can drive it and I know how to drive it. And that's really all that matters. I don't need to understand the engine, and it's not going to help me with using it. Mm-hmm. Aside from like, maybe if you're a mechanic or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I would like in that conversation, because most people just don't understand what's going on. And they're like, that's why I can't use it. I'm never going to own Bitcoin because I don't get what mining is. And it's like, okay, well, that doesn't matter though. And once we get past that, I think there'll be a much bigger conversation to be had about like crypto in general. But we have to get over that like philosophical hump first.
And the internal combustion engine is a good analogy, because when people say they don't understand how crypto works, I say, do you really understand how the internal combustion engine works? And you kind of do, but not really. Like, you
know, exactly. I
don't freaking know what a carburetor is. Do they even use carburetors anymore? Like, you know.
I couldn't tell you because I don't know and I don't need to know. Yeah, and that's the point, right?
And I have gotten in my own engine and fixed stuff in a car and stuff like that before a little bit, but like I still a lot I don't know. I just sort of take for granted. But there's a two kinds of things here, right? First of all, is do you find it to be is it a good thing? Well, use it. Well, number one, just use it. Get in a car, drive it, and be like, 100%. Oh, this is cool. I could commute quicker to my job this way, or look at the freedom I get where I don't have to keep a track of the bus schedules or whatever. And so, okay, I see the value in this. I will use it, or it doesn't work in my life. I'm not going to use it, but I understand how it has value for others. There's like that very user thing. Now, an investor is a little different, where an investor might want to dig in and see, like, how does this work? Like, are there going to be a lot of problems later? How much does it cost to source the parts? Is this a sustainable business model? Like all that kind of stuff.
Like a car collector or something. They definitely want to know what's under the hood.
If you're going to like put like $100,000 into like, you know, General Motors stock or something like that, you kind of want to know how it works. Or like, you know, with Tesla stock. And like, but the other thing that people don't do enough of that, but they really don't do enough, the investors, of using the shit. Because Crypto right. has like a couple dozen end user products. You know, everything else is like, oh, but like Cardano, what can you do with Cardano? Nothing. Like, you know, there's some memes and some NFTs or whatever, but like,
that's my biggest gripe with all these ETH killers. Like, yeah, what can you do? And, yeah. And is it just a duplicate of what it already exists?
Yeah, absolutely. It's like the user experience. And so, like, for example, I think anyone who explicitly owns Tesla stock, let's just use Tesla in a specific thing, like not people who have some sort of index fund or their manager throws some, they happen to own some Tesla stock that way. People that are like, I'm going to buy Tesla. Mm-hmm. Every single one of those should have ridden in a Tesla at least once. Just get in there, drive it or ride in it. Just know what the product this company is delivering. Because if it's mm-hmm. crap, you're not going to want to throw any money into that. Because what? You're just right. going to like gamble that they might have a good product someday? And that's completely insane. Like, you know, you have like VeChain, the official partner of the UFC and all this kind of stuff. Okay. And this is unreasonable shitting on VeChain, by the way. I have to say, because I've not done the research to say this. I just don't know if they have an end user product that's used. And I was talking to someone the other day who was very big on Ripple, on XRP, and was just like, oh, because the investor pitch of, you know, oh, interbank transfers is a big thing. Oh, that makes sense. And then like, oh, we got all these partnerships. Oh, that makes sense. And that's kind of, Grayscale put out a research a paper about like daily users of each crypto versus like market cap to find like the ratios, and they found that like XRP and Dash have the same number of users basically. In fact, Dash has more. Right. And then, but the prices are astronomically different. The market cap is just so different right now, and that kind of reminds me. I'm going to do another unsolicited, unpaid shill right here because why not? Everyone should check out at some point cryptofees.info because that's like a real hard to fake scoreboard for adoption, because it shows how much revenue is the network generating. So what are the fees, total fees? And some have different models and the nano people, we don't have fees. Okay, whatever. But for the most part, you can actually see some stuff. So like Ethereum is the very clear king. As far as $15 million a day, people are paying a total of $15 million a day to use the Ethereum network. Bitcoin is around $2 million a day, right, which is something, right? It could be higher, but whatever. BNB is almost $1 million. And then you go down to like these L2s, like our 94 fans, whatever. Polygon is $40,000 a day in fees that go in there. Dogecoin is $15,000 a day, which is not very much, but it's a lot more than these others. But then you start to go down to these other ones, right? Where, for example, like Polkadot is only generating around $3,000 a day in fees, which is not very much. Litecoin is like less than half that. Same with Monero. Bitcoin Cash is under $1,000 per day. And then you go to like these two, right? Ripple and Stellar. So Ripple is $2,300 a day in fees. Stellar is almost $200. And I've heard people say, "Oh my God, they're so big. They got all these partnerships. Everything's going great." You know, like really, like Ripple is old as shit. Like, and it's been at the very top of the crypto market cap rankings. It's been right up there for a very long sustained period of time with a large company with a large war chest.
Do banks actually use it, or it's like that's the possible use case?
That's where I haven't done enough research. I think it's more
fair enough.
It's more that's a possible use case, because if it was a real use case, you'd see serious revenue going through
that chain. there would be usage. Yeah, no, that makes sense,
because it costs money to run Ripple validators. I know they're not a proof of stake, because it's not like a fully decentralized system, but they still cost server costs and stuff, and for them all to be splitting $2,000 a day, it's not really worth it. So you have all this, like, so that's like number, so first of all, if I got into a project, I would love to see number one, I like, oh, tell me about it. Does it sound good? Number two, and of course, you're an actual like investor. I'm not an investor. I'm just like the crypto user guy, so you could probably add a lot more to this. But so what I would personally do would just, first, do I like the pitch? Does it sound good? The very next thing I want to do is use it. Use what? Like, okay, let me use it. Well, you know, it's not an end user product. Okay, well, let me use something that uses it. Like, let me play around with some bank that uses it for international settlements, or like, let me use a dApp that writes to the Polygon blockchain or whatever. I want to use it. And just if the promises don't line up, then it's like that's like a stop point right there. But then if I like it, next I want to dive into like now I want to look at the internal combustion engine. How does it work? Do I see any weird red flags in your design? Does that kind of work out? And then I want to see the crypto fees indicator, which we're still so early in crypto that's only a real metric for a few chains. But it's for those that it is, it's like, okay, like for Ripple, I think it's fair to judge Ripple on their fee revenue right now, as far as like, oh, is this
being used? And you know, I'll always jump in and say,
yes,
XRP locks up your funds when you first open a wallet and when you send a transaction. So I have 35 unusable XRP that will never be able to be used or sent or anything can be done with. And I just looked it up. There's 4,840,747 wallets times 30 Ripple, assuming that these are all like actual wallets. That would be 145 million Ripple that is just like sitting in wallets, unusable. That's not including the extra ones that get added per transaction. That's just the default baseline. So I don't know how much it's worth today, but 145 million XRP that can't be moved sounds like a pretty big problem.
Yeah.
So it's worth 62 cents. So that's like, I mean, it's not insane. Like it's $62 million or whatever, a little bit less or more, but yeah, I mean, that's a problem. And that, like, no wonder their transaction fees are so low, because no one can transact with that money. And it's like, yeah, I think if you have these weird things built into your design and like people aren't really using it. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like it's just, it's a sketchy cryptocurrency. And
yeah,
it always blows my mind that it's
you ran through
and connection. I mean, now we got Solana because I'm told, so what I was just saying was Solana's in the top five now, and I got some Solana recently for the first time just so I could test out Soul Card, which is like a credit card that uses Solana. But two out of the four transactions I made with my Solana just never went through. Like it said processing, and then it still said processing, can't send because it's processing. And after 30 minutes, it just stopped saying processing and it just never went through. And then I could resend, and it goes down like once a month. And I just don't see how it could get into the top five when half of my transactions fail. The blockchain goes down like on a regular basis. It's like, what are people like seeing in this? And it just blows my mind every time that XRP, Solana, all these chains can like get so much value under them. Mm-hmm. Hopefully that like it goes down after this cycle, but it blows my mind when people have no idea what they're investing in. Cause like, you know, my friends will say, oh, like I see Solana's up this percentage, this much percent, like I should buy Solana. And I go, try using it and then come back to me. If you can actually send a transaction and not fail, like maybe, but like I sent the picture to my friend when he brought that up, and I was like, look at these two failed transactions I just tried to make. Like it's insane that this is like supposed to be a viable chain.
Yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely. And I have to say, like, one of my friends, Justin Bonds, is a crypto researcher, and he has some very spicy takes. He's probably one of the most like reliable experts out there on crypto. Now I'm saying all this positive stuff because I'm gonna do a slight criticism, which, you know, so normally I would give him like his takes like a 90 to 95% endorsement for the most part. Like he's very researched, very like level-headed, very direct, and then he gets into arguments with people, and then he posts a thread. I was wrong about these things, and he posts the whole
thing. Right. But he got a bag of Solana.
Well, so he runs a crypto fund, right? Cyber Capital, I think it's Europe's oldest crypto hedge fund or something. And you know, they invest based on stuff like that. I know he's been very positive about. He was very critical about Solana in the early days, and then he became a little bit more positive because some things changed. And he's big into the on-chain scaling thing. The thing is, as far as I know, he does not use any crypto at all himself, partially, and he does not own any himself because to prevent conflicts of interest with his fund, right? It's kind of a thing he has to do because of that. Unfortunately, I think that he needs to hire someone, maybe me at some point, I don't know, to actually use a lot of this stuff, because he's very sound on the theory and like, this doesn't work, this does work, according to research paper, this, according to this stat, that, like, he's very sound. There's something that's missed in all that. And like, I think that he should be, in terms of Solana, a little like, pump the brakes a little bit on it with these kinds of experiences, because if the user is failing,
because it takes 2 seconds of using Solana to be like, oh, like, this isn't that great, regardless of what I read, right? Yeah.
And like, the facts and figures on Ethereum show that Ethereum does not have a great user experience. I could tell you that too, but the facts and figures on Solana, oh, it goes down. Well, it went down a million times before. Then it didn't go down for like years, I think, and then it went down like once this, either last year or this year. I don't remember which calendar year it was on. But it went down once, and other than that, it's been like working according to, you know, public things. But then there's just, if you have more than the very occasional failed transaction, then you're in Lightning Network territory, and that's no good. You just don't want, you don't want to be like, the customer, the user should expect to push a button and then it works. And this is one thing that I get into all the time. With, it's one of the few things I argue with the Bitcoin Cash community about a lot, is the instant transaction thing. Is the, oh, Bitcoin Cash is instant. Well, no. You can send a transaction and it'll be broadcast instantly, and it very, very likely will go through. And so you could probably, as soon as it shows up in like a second, you could probably say that's good. However, it is still possible to be double spent, and especially for large transactions, no exchange accepts unconfirmed Bitcoin Cash deposits. Zero. Zero exchanges. And very few merchant some merchant processors do, if they can control the conditions for the transaction. Like, well, did it get broadcast this way? What is the likelihood about this? But just straight up, it doesn't exist. And just the fact that, like, if a user has to wait on a payment, and you're like, well, that's fine because, you know, wait for a block, that's not a good user experience. And you can't just gaslight that away by saying, no, no, well, it's actually instant. These guys just, they must be maxis, and that's why they don't like, or, you know, you can't gaslight that away. And so, yeah, there's a very real user experience kind of thing. I know, like, one thing that Justin Bonds complains a lot about is the bad user experience of juggling a million ETH L2s and stuff. And that is accurate. That sounds like a user based critique, but then like, the user of Solana doesn't have to do that, but they do have to press send again a couple of times, which sucks. So yeah,
especially when you have to, like, I have to wait because if it doesn't go through after 10 minutes, I'm like, all right, screw it, I'll just resend. And it says still processing your last like transaction, so you can't send. And it's like, so I have to just wait here until this fails and then try again. So you have to wait like 30 minutes. So it's like, this possibly 30 second transaction is now going to take me like 30 plus minutes, and it might fail the second time, so it might take like an hour. So yeah, it's like, that's pretty unideal if you end up having to like try multiple times and you have to wait the full time out and all that.
Yeah, that's all very not ideal. The last data point I'll throw on, like, the crypto fees type thing, interesting example before we move on to the card thing to wrap up, is the Maya protocol stuff. So, I mean, obviously, full disclosure, I'm a huge fan of the Maya protocol. I was one of the early liquidity providers. I've done some work for them, et cetera. And they're a big, they're close with the Dash community. And so we do a lot of work together. So all that bias out of the way, I put up mayascan.org/stats. And if you want to look at that, you can. But basically, they have the swap fees, you know, which in line with a crypto fees thing, of the average cross-chain swap fees that they're earning is like 20 grand a day, I think, right now. The network just launched, I think it just turned 1 year old, right, as far as like the mainnet. So pretty new, a Thorchain fork with a decently growing volume. One thing that's interesting about Maya, though, is they don't have any coin inflation. They've never had any. All the coin supply got distributed on day, like basically day one from to the liquidity auction. And so a lot of
Right.
these protocols do have fees, but then they also have block subsidies from, the inflation, well, including Bitcoin, right? Most of Bitcoin is not fees. Most of what miners get paid for is inflation. And Maya's just never had any inflation. So that stat is like, well, this is 20 grand of actual revenue and no subsidy. And so it's a much more reliable, like, okay, this is literally like a business. We don't have any startup VC money that we're not burning through holders' money. And everyone who stakes for their nodes has half the native asset Kakao and half another asset like Bitcoin or Dash or, Kujira or one of these others. So
Right.
it's kind of like an interesting, like, you can actually see the stats of like, this is so much more than like something like, oh, XRP, which is like one entity controls all the money, basically, or a giant chunk of it. And then, they have all this money's locked up places, which is probably on purpose so the holders won't dump, And then there's the actual fee usage is like 10 is like 10% of, this very fledgling network. It's kind of interesting when you dive into those details as like from that point of view.
I mean, it's a crazy world of crypto. So you want to jump into the prepaid Visa and the crypto cards?
Yeah, let me I'm trying to see where I can scoot these around. So let's just start with the Bitrefill one that I've been using for years, I guess, or
Yeah, you'll have
for
to caveat with the legality that you were informing me about, or regarding the top-ups and stuff.
yeah, well, so let me just put this. So this is just a picture of Bitrefill, which, by the way, if you do sign up for Bitrefill, if you go bitrefill.com/invite/dash, that's a code that goes to that, gets us paid to keep on promoting some stuff. So if you want to do that, you can. If not, no, I did not intend to shill anything on this show other than Coin ATM Radar, but here we are. So, but as far as this, it's like basically if you go to like any supermarket or whatever and buy a prepaid, card, it's basically the digital version of this. You get a digital, like, MasterCard with a certain amount. With no account, no email, no anything. I think you have to give an email just so they know where to send the invite and stuff. You might have to, but it could be a burner email, but no account at all. You can get up to a $200 card. This is just the US one. I think C Canada has one that's virtually identical. And there's a really shitty one in Europe, but I won't even talk about that because it sucks. But so 200 per card. If you have an account, but no KYC, you get a pseudonymous account, you can get up to 500 per card. And then if you KYC, you can get up to 1,000 or to up to 1,000 per card and up to 10,000 total, like 10 $1,000 cards per day. But if you're KYCing, why would you do this card? You just wouldn't, in my opinion. But so that's kind of like the boilerplate, as far as I know, legal prepaid card. You can just buy a prepaid card and around these amounts, you cannot reload it. That's a big thing because I don't think it's legal to reload a card that doesn't have any extra identifying info. And I will say also, when you register, when you activate the card, you have to fill out a little name and address and phone number, but it's like, it's not KYC. Like, you can fake info if you want, right? So it's just like a contact thing. There are versions of this card. I don't know if any crypto places sell it, but there are versions of a similar card that have none of that. However, the UK specifically does not let any of their merchants accept payments from a super anonymous card like that. It's just too anonymous. That one little thing. So I experienced this firsthand last year when I went to, traveling through Europe. I had this one and I had the other one I'm telling you about both on my phone. And I tried in the other one worked in like 70% of places, but like in the UK, nowhere. And like buying bags for EasyJet, which is a UK company, nope. And certain retailers, even in Amsterdam, that just happen to be connected to the UK somehow or whatever, they just wouldn't do it. Whereas the Bitrefill one worked almost everywhere. These I've been using a lot to add on Google Pay or whatever, to do Tap and Pay, and it's worked out really well. Recently, like the last week, I've had issues with a couple getting added there. So I'll have to just chase that up. I used to use these to do like Midjourney subscriptions or like pay for Twitter and all this kind of stuff. They don't work for that anymore, by the way. Like that changed in the last year. So there's some, that's the
thing. Like Stripe specifically is not allowing those, or?
It must be Stripe. Stripe stopped allowing these. And so just so you know, like this is a great crypto workaround for stuff, but it's like.
Well, yeah. I'm going to test the one that I have then for Twitter, and I'll let you know, because that's it. That's a good question. So the difference with that, it sounds like, is you are inputting an address and stuff, and like it could be fake, but you're giving them an address. So with BitStore, and let me get the exact names here so I don't make any mistakes, Bit.store. Yeah, Bit.store offers a crypto card. And it's actually partnered with Binance, surprisingly. I didn't actually even notice that. And soulcard.sh.
Yeah.
Soulcard only accepts Solana and USDT, and then BitStore pretty much takes everything.
Yeah, let me throw up BitStore on the screen there. And by the way, huge disclaimer, I have not heard of these before like today or a couple days ago. And so I have no idea if these are scams.
So this is just from my
experience. If you want to gamble, go, you know, buy Slurf or don't buy Slurf, but whatever.
But you can put a small amount in, like you can just put in like $20 or whatever. So it's not like, so they're not like, you know, putting all this money. You could put in a tiny amount, test it, do what you want to do. I've paid for Netflix, Amazon, and Google Pay so far. Pretty useful. Mm-hmm. The big difference though, and why I think these are so useful, is they actually like give you a fake address and like all this stuff. Well, I think it's a real address, but they do everything for you. Like all the KYC aspect is all like faked and anonymous, and it's all just done for you, created. So if you do actually have to put in a billing address, and it has to be a real address, et cetera, and it's connected to the card, actually, it has all that. So that's actually very, very useful. And I haven't had any issues with it so far.
So it's it's no KYC. They don't do any identifying at all.
Zero. I mean, they ask you for your name to just put on the card, but obviously you can put whatever name you want. And obviously that's what I did. But I mean, the only thing that they're asking you for is the name to put on the card, which, again, you can just do whatever you want.
So it seems like there's a physical card, which is KYC.
Yeah, you can get a physical card, but like that's not at all what we're talking about. They offer physical cards and virtual cards. We're only talking about the virtual card in this sense.
Yeah, so the virtual one also has a 2.5% top-up fee, which, you know,
not ideal. So the only difference is like, yes, the fees are where they'll get you. However, there is like zero other options for me as a Canadian to have a US-based card with an address attached to it that I can spend pretty much on any website that I've tested so far, which is actually fantastic. And you guys have privacy.com, which allows you to KYC one time and then do anonymous. We don't have that in Canada. So like this is the only way that I can achieve an anonymous. Well, it is more anonymous than privacy.com because they don't make you do the original KYC. But this is the only way that you could actually like do this. I mean, I've had no issues. I've topped up the card a couple times already. I've tested withdrawing all of my money. I've tested deleting the account. I've tested making a brand new account. I was using Skiff, but then I realized Skiff is being bought by Notion and pretty much disbanded, which, why did they buy it? Just so they could ruin a good privacy email. Yeah, now I'm just using Tuda, like Tuda Noda or whatever, IO. I'm just using that email, so it's just a burner email. Throw that in there, fake name, address, everything. Does it all for you. Really, really useful. Again, I mean, user beware, buyer beware, but you could put a tiny amount in and test it out, see that it works, and then go from there. The Soul Card team on Twitter is like the most degen team I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Like their posts are so degen, but I guess they're just having fun with it. Like they're posting like, you know, the picture of the guy with just like a full gold outfit. And it's like, what are you buying on Soul? Like stuff like that. They're very degen, but yeah, I mean, from my tests, it's worked amazingly and no complaints so far. So I'm going to keep testing them. We haven't really had any good options in Canada. I mean, I haven't tested out the BitRefill one, But we haven't had many good options. And my last card, Bitvo, that company got bought up by, I believe it was Bittrex or Bitfinex, or one of them bought them up and just dissolved it. So then my crypto so card awful. Is no longer. I know. It's like overnight, my crypto card just stops working. And I look on their website, it's like, we've sold it. And it's like, great, the one option we had in Canada. So I can't get a physical card anymore, but these are my only options for virtual cards. So if you're a Canadian, BitStore and Soul Card. Again, not really an endorsement by me, because like I don't actually know who these people are, but it is like definitely worth mentioning, because it's so hard to find like something like this. And they're US cards, so I don't know if that makes a difference, but if it's helpful that you have an address in the US that you can use, then this is a way to do that. It hasn't been an issue for me to just put my billing address as US with any Canadian purchases. So I've had no issues. So it's been great.
There's a Canadian Bitrefill card that's virtually identical to the US one.
However, I saw that. I think it's MasterCard.
Yes, it's also MasterCard, except there's a black background, and it does say it cannot be added to Apple Pay and all that kind of stuff. So it's online only.
Right.
Which for me is like the biggest thing, is because like online I could buy basically anything I want with crypto. It's just when you're like in store, like I need to run into this specific store, and it's just like, does they have a gift card for it? Do I know them? So for me, the actual physical purchasing is the most important part of these. But this is kind of interesting.
I haven't tested though, like, because you could take a credit card, put it on your phone, and then pay with NFC tap, right? So maybe I should try that with these crypto cards, because I feel like that would be pretty huge.
That's a pretty big rabbit hole that I went down, because the issuing bank of those prepaid cards has to be supported by Google Pay or Apple Pay. And Apple Pay will suspend your account if you add too many new cards in a short period of time and stuff. There's some weird stuff with that. Google Pay, Google Wallet, I've never had an issue with that. Of course, I have an anonymous Google account. But a lot of those cards just aren't supported. Like, also like Garmin Pay and freaking, you know, I think Samsung Pay and just all these other Swatch Pay and all these other random like NFC wallet things don't support
right.
the prepaid cards bank, password bank that does almost all of these things.
Right.
And then, you know, there's just a lot of weird device compatibility and things, and it's a whole mess. But if you figure it out, it is worth it when you can do that.
I'll try with these, because I don't know if they're considered as prepaid cards or if they're considered to be like real cards, because they have like addresses and everything behind them. But that's a good question. I'll try it out and I'll let you know. But
The problem also, from what I had some, there was a, you know, will remain unnamed. And if you know, you know, there was a anonymous crypto card provider that had a reloadable card at one point, and that got taken down pretty, you know, after 6 months of like a beta or something. And apparently the reloadable part, when it came back without being reloadable, because the reloadable part was like, it's like you have an account. It's kind of like you have an account. And if you have an account with a, you know, customer, you kind of need to KYC them, I think. And so that's in the US. Elsewhere in the world, I've never seen a no KYC reloadable card that wasn't a complete scam until, well, there was like Wirex used to be no KYC up to a certain total amount. You could reload it, but it was a total load version. That was like early days, and then there's this big drought of like, this wasn't a thing. There was no KYC reloadable card. And then the last like month or so, these ones like you've been mentioning, there's a couple others I see pop up and I'm like skeptical.
Yeah, they're all just popping up out of nowhere. It is a little suspicious, I'll admit, because they all use the same support ticket like service and stuff. And I was like, why are they all using like the same, like, that is a little weird to me. Like,
like, I wonder where Soul Card is based out of. I don't even see anything. I do know, was it the BitStore one appears to be Lithuania. And so, I don't know, Lithuania is not like a financial center or anything like that, as far as I know. So who knows? I'd have to like check out some of these things. But I'm sure as long as you don't, there's always that rugging risk. But
Just don't put a lot of money in it and play around with
yeah.
it, I guess.
And hopefully that stuff will be all over. Let me look up to a couple more things real quick. So first of all, I'll just hit on this Bitrefill thing, the Bitrefill shopping thingy. So Bitrefill has been advertising this job where you get paid, I think a 1,000 euros a day for a minimum of 2 days to go shop everywhere, and you have a 5,000 euro limit to go basically buy everything. And so the point of this, why they're doing this, is because Bitrefill is releasing a KYC, but top-upable prepaid virtual card. I think they have a physical card as well. So again, of the three pillars of crypto, which is denominated in not dollars or euros and not fiat, self-custody in your crypto, like you don't have to give it to Coinbase to hold on to and then do that, and then privacy, like no KYC. This is two of those three pillars, right? So we're talking about the three pillars for the other ones, but this is two of the three. And so if someone just wants to like have all their money in crypto, self-custody, they don't care about being super private, or they spend their crypto privately when they can, but they don't mind having a KYC card on the side for everything else. This will be a good thing for Europeans. So that. Now, I also made a post about Spritz, right? So Spritz has a prepaid card, a prepaid virtual card. I have tested it out. I have a work one, and I just started using a personal one to try out. I queued up this thing from the Dash account. So they added ability for, so Spritz is completely non-custodial as well. Also completely KYC, but completely non-custodial. And in addition to the bill pay thing, which is US only, I think right now, they have like a prepaid virtual card you can top up instantly with Dash, and I'm sure there was some other EVM type stuff that might be instant, but I know you just Dash and you get it right away. And you can create multiple accounts, multiple cards easily, so you can like give some to your like significant other or your employees or whatever. And so then just anytime they need to top up, you just hit them with some money, boop, top it up, use your card. So for actual practical, like you have a company and you have like a personal and business card, or like you have employees, or you got a family and you want to like, oh, you want to give your kid some spending money, and you're all in crypto, you can just do this super easily. And so also, if you use spritz.finance/dash will be the better way to sign up for obvious reasons. But so there's that, and there's a lot of these kinds of things popping up now. Everyone's trying to use crypto. The mainstream people don't care that much about the KYC part, which is why you see this. And finally, Ubit. So Ubit, and I have not used Ubit, by the way. I don't think it's available in the
Connection.
US.
Oh, there we go.
OOBIT is the thing. And it's basically, I don't think it's technically a card, but it's the equivalent of it, where you have an app, you load stuff on it, and then you just do an NFC pay. You select your coin, you NFC pay, and you can do that. I think it's probably custodial, right? But it's probably like a custodial thing that whenever you make a purchase, it sells that amount of crypto for fiat that then loads the card, kind of thing. So I'm pretty sure that's how it works. But so there's a lot of spending options coming out. It's all pretty cool. Stay away from the KYC ones if you can afford to, but if not, whatever.
I mean, I'm excited to see more cards coming out and more options, 'cause I mean, it's always surprising to me when I see like, oh, like there's no KYC options. Like, I'm surprised no one ever, wants to fill this like gap. And then randomly I get two at the same time and then find out about the Bitrefill one. So I mean, if people want to spend their crypto in a hopefully anonymous way, this is one way to potentially do that.
Yeah, for sure. And hopefully the real anonymous way to do it is directly spending your crypto directly.
100%. Yeah.
I've been, and this was my final little rant. We should probably wrap up after that, but I've been in the thick of it, doing like biz dev and talking to a lot of companies and stuff like that. And a lot of this is just to make sure, because I finally got to the spot where for a lot of, like a good chunk of the world, like maybe half the world, if they're like, I want to live on crypto, I can like show, I can show them how to buy some or to get paid in it. And I can show them like a wallet to use, and I can show some spending things to allow them to pay a lot of their bills. So I can already do that pretty well. But then it's just like for the merchant side, how do I accept, like, because you can't just rely on like five different centralized, like, oh, Bitrefill and Spritz and a few of these card things. You can't just be like, I got it. I can only spend my crypto through intermediaries. You want to start increasing actual adoption of crypto. And when I'm thinking about like, okay, I'm a merchant, I want to take crypto, how do I do it? And I've had no good answers. Like, they've had tons of potential answers, but no good ones. And so, like, for example, oh, like Now Payments is a great one, but that has like a e-commerce plugin as well as a point of sale app. But they're, both of those had some issues to where, like, if you scan the QR code on their point of sale app, this is fixed, by the way. I don't think it's an issue anymore, but you would have to manually input the crypto amount yourself. And like, who the hell is going to do that in a store?
Right. Frame, right?
The QR code, it's BIP21. It came out in 2012. It's 12 years old. You should be able to just grab the whole thing, right? And so there's some stuff like that. And it's like, okay, well then iVendPay is a fantastic hat. They do vending machines as well as physical point of sale devices, as well as point of sale like apps, as well as e-commerce stuff. And they do fiat conversion. And so that's all great. But then it's like, okay, that's a lot of Europe and then a lot of like the Middle East and places and not in the US at all. It's like, okay, what do I do for US customers? Well, there's BitPay, but BitPay is kind of KYC's the customer a lot of times and is garbage in their UX. Their UX is garbage. I'm sorry if I'm speaking very strongly. It's not very good in my opinion. A lot of people complain. So then what I do, I just today had a call with Rocket Fuel, which actually seems to work a lot for this. If you want a US working type thing. So there's just so much of this patchwork of stuff. I'm trying to like figure it all out, make sure all the, you know, in my case, make sure Dash is on all these, but like for everyone else should probably, you know, whatever your favorite coin is, try to figure out to make deals to make it all universal. But then also a lot of these have like an okay, like, they're not really set up to be super useful. And I got to like work with them, be like, look, do this, do that. You have like five pages that the customer has to go through before the finalizing the payment, cut that down to like one, just scan it works. Right. There's just so much work to like figure that stuff out. But after that, I think we can start onboarding en masse.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like I've always said, I mean, it's like once people can actually use it, I thought social media was going to be the route to crypto usage, but I mean, it's kind of like died down until we see it on like legacy platforms. I don't know how true that would be. Yeah. I think it'll be more through actually like spending it and using it now. So what you're doing is very, very important work, and it's very underrated because there's so few people who are actually living on crypto like through and through. So I mean, yeah, I mean, You're definitely the guy to teach people. So if people do want to learn how to spend crypto, they should definitely be checking you out.
Yeah, and I should say also at Rare Passenger on X, Rare Passenger pseudonym, whatever, Esteban, because he's very open about his name. He's been sort of approaching the same thing, more from a BTC angle, and now he's more dabbling into BCH, Litecoin, and Monero. And so he, like, for the Venn diagrams of knowledge, there's a lot of overlap, but not perfect overlap. So he's got some good like living on Bitcoin stuff. So that's good too. It's not his number one job, but Lorenzo Ray is like a maxi basically. He only really uses Bitcoin, but he does actually like live on it. And so he has some interesting stuff of like which Lightning wallets to use, all that kind of stuff. And yeah, so that's a good stuff. Oh my, almost 2 hours long.
Yeah.
Show. Might as well hit up shill o'clock. Is there anything specific you want to shill before we wrap this thing up?
I mean, you know, you can find me anywhere at Scottsy Business or for my podcast Tech and Things. I mean, I haven't really been posting. I'm still working on some stuff very laxly as I'm very, very busy. I'm working like 60 hours a week with Kudos. So, I mean, if you are curious, you can check out Kudos. They're on Cosmos. It's also a pretty cool,
like, show on Kudos on this, yeah, this channel. So I did an episode, so if you want to check them out, I think it's pretty interesting stuff.
Yeah, it's essentially just like decentralized cloud computing. We're working towards decentralized cloud computing on Cosmos. So yeah, I mean, it's a cool project, and I'm a lot of my time is on that right now, but I definitely do want to start posting more again. And I still am sort of working on some things very, very laxly, but I hope to get those out fairly soon. So yeah
sounds good to me. All right, thanks everyone for watching. This has been Digital Cash Rundown, episode 155, the only one and only Scottsy Business, aka Scott Cunningham, aka Number One Ham, if you want him to pay attention in his comments. Please like, comment, share, subscribe. If you have any interest in using any of these services I talked about, you can hit me up for a referral link. I didn't include them in the bio, and I won't, just because it's not a planned part of the show. But yeah, all the other ones, buyer, user, beware. Just, I'm going to try them out. What can I say? I'm going to hit them up to try to get them all to take Dash that don't, right?
Yeah.
It's part of my job, my day job, right? But try them out, see if they work. Have fun with those gross fees, the top-up fees. Which, by the way, BitRefill card, because you can't top it up, doesn't have fees. So it's just, you buy $200 worth of card, you get it for $200, and that's it. Whereas, yeah, you know, with some, even including Spritz, I think Spritz has like a 1.2, something like that, 1.25, something like that percent fee, but like a $2 minimum for at least Dash that I know of. So if you do, you know, if you buy top up $200 at a time, it's like a 1% fee or whatever. I don't know. But yeah, if you want to try these things, I love learning. Like, Scott and I are very similar in this way, that we both love finding new things to use in crypto, whereas other people just like to talk about it, you know? And so if you find anything cool, oh yeah, but have you tried this thing out? If I odds are, I guess, but if I haven't, please let me know. I'd love to just look into some new stuff. You know, I'm always learning. So there we go. Have a good weekend, guys. Don't forget, taxation is theft. Your phone is spying on you. Fiat is a scam. Live on crypto before it's too late. And take a shot of maple syrup for the Canadians. All right. See you guys around. Peace.
All right. See ya.